Our next case is State v. Huff. State v. Huff. Mr. Hayes?
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Hayes, and I'm the attorney for the appellant Jeffrey Huff, who was convicted by a jury of first-degree sexual assault and sentenced to a term of from 12 to 20 years imprisonment. We raised two issues on appeal. The second issue has to do with the excessiveness of the sentence. I'd like to submit that just on the brief. The primary issue in this case is whether the trial court, abused its discretion by discharging a juror without first holding a hearing to determine whether or not that juror was disqualified from continuing to serve on the jury.
And Counselor, just so we have the right framework, we're not talking about 29-2006, which is a challenge for cause with a prospective juror, right? We're talking about the procedure under 29-2004 or after a juror has been sworn in.
That's right.
Okay.
What happened in this case was when we started the trial, voir dire was done, jury was passed for cause, jurors were selected and impaneled. And then the following day, before the trial itself actually began, the juror in question, Miguel Figueroa, brought to the court's attention his own concern as to his fitness to serve as a juror in the case. What he had told the court was that he didn't think he could be a fair juror. After he disclosed that to the court, we had an opportunity to conduct further voir dire. And after that voir dire, the state moved to strike Mr. Figueroa for cause. The court determined that there was not cause to strike the juror, and he was left on the panel. The case then proceeded, evidence was adduced, both parties rested, and then before the case was argued and instructed, the court expressed concern to the attorneys that Mr. Figueroa, in his opinion, had not been paying attention during the course of the trial. He said that he didn't see Mr. Figueroa take any notes. He said he wasn't sure if the observations of the attorneys would have been the same as his, but that he had some concern about whether or not he was paying attention. The state, without there being any further voir dire of Mr. Figueroa, made a motion to strike, again arguing the same thing it had argued when Mr. Figueroa had raised the issue himself, that he couldn't be a fair juror, and then in addition that he had lied on the questionnaire about his criminal history. The state offered transcription of the voir dire of the witness and also a criminal history from the Lincoln Police Department. We objected to both of those as being irrelevant. The transcript of the voir dire was irrelevant because that argument had already been made. The court had overruled that objection, and so there was no new basis for striking this juror. We objected to the Lincoln Police Department criminal history being offered into evidence because that was information that was available to the state prior to jury selection, and it was not anything that was ever raised by the state. I mentioned those objections were overruled, and Mr. Figueroa was removed from the case and replaced with the alternate juror in the case. The case law is that if a juror or the statute 2004, 29-2004, provides that if a juror either dies or is discharged, the court can then replace that juror with the alternate juror who had been impaneled. And as we mentioned before, when the grounds for striking the juror arise after the jury has been sworn, it is the duty of the court, in Tate v. Myers it was held, that it was the duty of the court to hear evidence to determine whether or not that person is in fact not qualified to continue to sit on the jury. As the state pointed out in its brief, in State v. Hildig, the court held that the rejection of a juror is a matter of discretion for the trial court, and so the issue is, did the court abuse its discretion in this case by removing the juror? In Hilding, the issue of whether or not the juror should be stricken was raised by the defendant, who claimed that what was raised by the defendant objected to the removal of the juror in the Hilding case because they said he was not disqualified to be on the jury under 29-2006. So he should not be removed pursuant to 2004. And in that case, the court held that removal of a juror is not strictly limited to the bases for disqualification under 29-2006, but there can be other good cause to remove. And in this case, it was the health of the juror. And the court said that if a juror is unable to continue to serve because of their health, that's a legitimate basis. In the case, another case cited by the State versus Prudelik, that was a case where the defendant had moved to strike a juror who disclosed during the evidence in the case that they knew one of the witnesses. In that case, the juror was not removed, but the court did conduct an inquiry into the question of whether or not that juror could continue to be an unbiased juror given their knowledge of the witness in the case, and the court held that they could. So that was not held to be an abuse of discretion.
Is your main argument here that the judge didn't have conduct an inquiry with the juror himself to determine if he should be disqualified? If he had met with the juror and had this inquiry, then you wouldn't have an argument here?
Well, we think we would have had an argument still. I mean, our complaint is that he did not conduct the inquiry, which the courts have held is absolutely necessary in this case. If the judge had conducted an inquiry of this juror, the issue in that would have been whether or not he could serve as a fair and impartial juror.
Despite having lied on his juror questionnaire.
Well, what we had done in this case was we also conducted a search of the jurors on the panel and discovered that there were three other jurors who had not disclosed criminal convictions. And so we moved to strike those jurors. That motion was overruled. Didn't make that motion because I thought they should be removed, but just to show that this person was being treated differently.
And you made that motion after the court stated its concern about this juror, or during the jury selection?
No, this was towards the end of the trial.
Okay.
So it was after the court granted the state's motion.
Okay.
Right. And we said this was not in and of itself a disqualifying factor, because there are three other people who were on the jury panel who were not stricken, who also had criminal records.
Did they have, this particular juror, as I understand it, had a conviction for an assault, and this was an assault case that the juror sat on, is that correct?
As I recall, it was, he did have a, I think he had a misdemeanor assault conviction, yes. I see I'm out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, I think what distinguishes this case from any of the other cases where there's been an inquiry into the fitness of a juror to sit is the fact that Figueroa's answers are frankly all over the place. He is the one who initially brought up the problem. As soon as the jury, literally, almost as soon as the jury's impaneled, he apparently has a change of heart and decides he's not really cut out for this kind of thing and starts giving excuses as to why he doesn't want to be on or why he doesn't think he'd be a good juror. He's from the Bronx. He's had encounters with police that he didn't think were particularly pleasant. He has experience with domestic violence. When he was started, the parties questioned him to some extent, and the state asked him, well, would you be biased for the state, for the defendant, or for both? And he inexplicably said, I'm not going to comment on that. That's one of the most bizarre answers ever. And then they started questioning him, and he says, well, you know, wrong is wrong, and I'm not going to be biased for the defendant because, you know, you still have to look at everything. And ultimately, after talking to him for a few minutes, he ultimately, apparently very reluctantly, agreed that he could be fair and impartial, and he was dismissed, and there was some discussion between the court and the parties about what had just transpired, and state moved to essentially remove him from the panel because of his answers, and court said, well, I'm not going to remove him for cause at this point, but we're going to leave the door open on this and see what goes on as the trial goes on.
Is there any precedent for doing that? Leaving the door open to possibly strike a juror later?
Well, I think ultimately that's what you do regardless, because he says, okay, we don't have it at this point, but we're going to keep an eye on him because everybody knows from, you know, from here on out that this guy is being a little strange about this whole jury process thing. And so as at the end of the evidence, the judge said, okay, I've been watching this guy, and if he were a third grader, I'd have him staying after class because he hasn't been paying the slightest bit of attention to what's been going on in this. And the state said, you know, we've had concerns from the outset, and as a result of those concerns, we did a record check on him and found out that he was not truthful in what he had said in voir dire or on his jury questionnaire, and we're going to essentially renew our motion to remove him from the panel. Again, there was more discussion about what went on, and the court ultimately decided that, okay, now I think I have good cause shown to remove this guy. He is obviously very reluctant for whatever reasons after being selected as a juror to be a juror. He lied about what was on his jury questionnaire, and until he started being weird about it and bringing himself to everyone's attention, we didn't have any reason to pursue that subject any further. But since he's essentially made himself the subject of additional scrutiny, I don't think the state was unfair in continuing to look more deeply into him and found out that, in fact, he had been dishonest.
But doesn't State v. Myers say that it's the duty of the court to hear the evidence and examine the jurors to determine if they should be disqualified for cause?
It does, and I guess they did that in the beginning with him, and his answers were, again, kind of all over the place. He started out saying, no, 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 I'm not fit for this, and ultimately they kind of eventually beat him into submission and said, well, yeah, I suppose I could be fair and impartial. But with the additional evidence that came up about the juror after the close of the evidence, the district court decided, I think I now have good cause shown to dismiss this person for not paying attention, for not being truthful about what his criminal history is, for not you know, paying any attention to what was going on. And I think it's kind of the old cumulative error argument. Each of those individually may not have been sufficient to remove him, but as you add them all together, you've got someone who is kind of penultimately unsuited to be a juror in this case.
Well, the not paying attention, that was simply the judge's observation, right?
No, yes.
And without an inquiry of the juror as to whether he was paying attention, doesn't that open the door to some potential abuse? I mean, you know, perhaps I haven't looked like I've been paying attention today, but I have been. And so shouldn't you ask me if I've been paying attention, you know? So I had a little trouble with that, without the hearing, without the inquiry.
And the district judge did acknowledge that. He said, you know, people pay attention differently. He said, but I haven't seen this guy take a note. I haven't even seen him with a notepad. I mean, I think the judge actually did say, you know, if this were a third grade class, I'd be having him stay after school, and we'd have a little discussion about his you know, his inability to pay attention. So it must have been extremely obvious that the guy was staring off into space or just simply not attending to the matters that should have been attended to.
Well, and the judge also commented that he was only taking a cursory look at the exhibits as they were being circulated among
Yes, that's correct. He was obviously minimally, if at all, interested in the proceedings that were going on. And if you've got a juror like that and you have an alternate juror, which they did in this case, I think the only fair thing to all parties and to the system, frankly, is to put someone in there who is at least interested in the process and would give everybody a fair shake.
So is that going to be the precedent then, that if either party raises to the judge, I've noticed that juror 3 has not been paying attention or looking at the exhibits very closely, so perhaps we should conduct an inquiry to make sure that they have understood it. I mean, how do you do that, and why would you do that, and isn't it going to create a lot of room for abuse?
Probably not, because once you get a jury selected, nobody really wants to go through and juggle jurors again, especially at the close of the evidence. And I wish I could remember the case. There was a case a few years back where they dismissed a juror essentially in the middle of trial because he was literally appeared to be sleeping through the proceedings. And apparently everybody had noticed that because nobody had any real beef with doing that. But if you've got someone who is obviously not paying attention, obviously disinterested in the entire process that they've been selected for, it seems to me that the only fair thing to do to all the parties involved is to get that person out of there and prevent the possibility of a mistrial or a hung jury or whatever, and simply proceed with somebody who's a little more into the entire process.
Well, and it's my understanding this gentleman brought himself onto the radar by having the conversation that he had the morning after the jury was impaneled.
That's correct. That's correct.
And we're not looking at reasons for discharge under 2006.
Correct.
Or we're not looking for reasons to strike under 2006.
Yeah, correct.
We're looking at reasons for discharge under 2004.
Right.
And there are no reasons set forth right in the statute.
Correct.
But we have from case law the procedure that's supposed to be followed, and I think that's what the appellant is arguing, that there was no inquiry with this juror. Is it your position that while there was inquiry, it happened at the beginning?
Yes.
And then based upon observation, then the judge is like taking an objection under advisement, I'm going to give you some leeway and then I'm going to abstain.
Exactly. He brought himself to everyone's attention by saying, I don't really want to do this. They had several pages worth of discussion with him about his reasons for it, whether he could be fair and impartial. The answers were equivocal at best. Ultimately, I think he did sort of agree he could probably go ahead and do this, but his behavior throughout the trial indicated that he was clearly uninterested in the entire process and would much prefer to have been removed from the jury from the outset. I think when you have a juror that is in this position, which frankly to my mind is in memory is unprecedented, to have somebody immediately upon jury selection saying, oh, King's X, I don't really want to be here, then when you have somebody like that, I think they deserve to be scrutinized more closely than the average juror, and if there is cause...
And why wouldn't the whole criminal record thing have come up at that point, then, in that very beginning stage?
Well, they were in court, and I would assume that at that particular moment in time, the state didn't have access to the computer research to sit down and pull up his criminal history at that point. Once the evidence was concluded and before it was submitted to the jury, then the whole juror issue came up again, and the state said, I think we've got more reasons than he was willing to let on at the beginning as to why he shouldn't be a juror in this particular thing. And from thence, they adduced additional evidence. And again, it's kind of like the cumulative error sort of thing. As it all proceeds along, you wind up with good cause to remove the juror and impanel an alternate. And I see my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hayes, have any time left? It's over. All right. The case is submitted. Counsel, you're excused.